And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sko. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance. We look forward to having a fun time here over the next hour of topping up what's going on in the world of sports. Here we are right here post-Super Bowl. Atlanta was buzzing here for the last week. It had like 100 million people. Seems like they were in town, and you couldn't go anywhere for the past week. But it was fun, though. A lot of Southern hospitality, a lot of good reviews for Atlanta Super Bowl. The best thing about the Super Bowl weekend and Super Bowl week was the stuff that happened through the week, because the game was tragically sorry. if you were somebody who's looking for, if you're looking for offense, you were really disappointed in that score, because you hit all this firepower on both sides. But if you're a defensive person, you loved how tough the Rams played. The Rams defense held their end, and the Patriots defense took away everything the Rams could do, and the score was reflective of that. What do you think, Sko?
Well, see, people haven't been paying attention. What has been said since the beginning of time? Offense sell tickets and defense wins championships. And the offense is what got people to come to the game, and the defense is what took the trophy back to New England. But the game pretty much went like I thought it would go, except for the low scoring. I thought that New England would control the ball and stifle LA's offense and win the game. And that's exactly what happened. Anytime you hold an opponent to 13 points in today's football, you expect to win the game. So that
Absolutely. That
speaks to how ineffective LA's offense was. A lot of that was the defensive scheme and the play calling of on New England's part. I was glad to hear and see Brian Flores get props, for calling the defensive signals and all, and not giving so much credit to Bill Belichick, because he really did an outstanding job with his plan and what he did to the Rams, and he was, it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to get the Miami job, which he did.
Right.
So that was a nice parting gift. Went out on a high note.
Absolutely, I was out there last Sunday before last, rather. I was out there at the hangar when both teams came in. And there was a meme that's going around out there, and it said that touchdown when the Rams arrived into Atlanta was the only touchdown that they scored that they had the entire week, which was pretty brutal. But Flores, they did a great job, and the Rams. It was really surprising that they're going to find Rob Gronkowski sometime, somewhere, and for them to hit that big play that they did late in the game, and it seems like Edelman was open all night long. And that, to me, that had to be frustrating for a defensive player. But it seems like the Patriots always, always, always exploit those mismatches. And their guys, you know, rarely are these guys covered. They always seem like they, you know, they're beating somebody.
Well, I think with Edelman, I think, you know, what you have to do with him, well, with New England's passing game period, is get them out of their rhythm, either by putting pressure on Brady or disrupting the timing on the pass routes, you know, bumping receivers, knocking them off stride, holding them, or whatever you have to do to get that done. And you know,
well, yeah,
that just didn't happen. And then
and you see with the, you see with the theme had been all going through all of this was that here you go, Boston beating LA in the World Series. You got Boston beating LA in the Super Bowl, and then coming up as the NBA season is wind coming to a wind here the next last couple of months. It looks like
I
it may
think,
be Boston
I don't,
and
I don't
LA again.
Have to worry. I don't have to, we don't we won't have to worry about that. That's not happening.
Okay.
That's not happening.
It's a pipe dream of LA holding up his hand. But tonight our guest is gonna be Billy Knight, a former standout basketball player at Pitt, former all star in the NBA and the ABA. NBA executive, just a tremendous career on and off the court. And matter of fact, I think Billy's with us right now. Billy, you there?
Absolutely. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
Hey,
great.
Billy. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I have no complaints.
Yep. Well, first of all, Billy, before we get started, tell Tim that what he just said about L.A. and Boston – I'm not going to say fake news. That ain't even that don't even qualify as fake news.
Well, I don't know. I can't predict the future, you know, or anything, Roscoe. It doesn't look likely like that's going to happen this year. But you know, you never know in this world. You still got to play the game out. You're still going to have to play it. But if I were a betting man, I wouldn't bet that way. No, don't bet that way.
I know earlier when I saw that it looked like it was going to be LeBron and the Lakers are going to give up the entire team for AD. I said, so it's going to be LeBron, AD, and three guys from the Y are going to be left for the Lakers to play the rest of the season. But they pulled out, evidently, or it seems as if they pulled out.
Yeah, I guess
the
asking prices were too high, I guess. It seems like they feel like they're asking it too much for them, so that's what I hear. But, you know, still, in those things, you don't know that either because they could say they're giving up and still be talking, too. So we just have to wait and see what happens on that because Anthony Davis is a heck of a player. I know all the teams in the league would love to have him.
Well, Billy,
well, I heard some people that they likened this to the Herschel Walker trade with the Cowboys several years ago. If there's somebody to do something like that.
Well, Billy, you know, because you were involved in it, and as I learned, you can't believe a lot of what you hear as the trade deadlines approaches and at draft time.
No question. No question, Roscoe.
They would lie to you.
It's just a way of life at that time, I think so. You know, you just don't want to believe everything you hear. That's for sure, because, like I said, they could say they're not talking and be talking on the other line.
Right. But let's talk about, you know, the trade deadline and all that has been going on. I mean, it was my experience that, you know, the trade deadline was more about talk than actual trades being made, but that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. What's going on? Why is that happening?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that are unhappy with the teams they have, so they're looking to see if it's possible to do something. But the rules have been relaxed a little bit, so trades are a little easier to make these days too. They're a little easier to facilitate a deal. Because the rules were more stringent, but now they're a little more relaxed. So it's easier to do a deal, but, you know, you've got to want to do a deal in order to get the deal worked on and talked about anyway. So I think there's a lot of teams in a position where they're thinking about making improvements either for this end of the season run that's coming up or for the future, to get a number of draft picks or a number of young players for the future. So it just depends on your particular situation, but there seems to be a lot of teams that are interested in doing something.
Well, Philly made the trade for Tobias Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a team that everybody was, you know, really hot on. They haven't really performed and shown what people had expected. How much will he help them?
Well, Tobias Harris is a good player. I know he's going to add. He's a talented player, so he's certainly going to be a positive for Philly this year. I think he's a very good player. I mean, he was averaging over 20 points a game, shooting at a good percentage, and just a good all-around player. So I think he'll help them. I mean, their team is loaded. And, you know, and sure, it's debatable that maybe they have too many players now. You know, too many guys are going to be unhappy for sacrificing some. But I really like him as a player, and he's sort of been unheralded throughout the league, but and been traded a few times. But I think he's a good player, and I think he'll certainly help Philly.
Does that signal anything about Fultz? Does that say, okay, we're moving on? Or would that even kind of hint toward that?
Yeah, maybe it could. It could. I don't know what's going through someone's head, of course, but he can play now, and they were hoping that, you know, Fultz was developing. Fultz is a much younger player, undeveloped, and he's had injury problems. So this is a move that certainly will help them right now this year, going into this stretch run of the season and this year's playoffs. He's ready to go, and what they decide to do with Fultz certainly, you know, could have, I mean, Tobias Harris could have a bearing on that, because his salary is going to figure in, and it could mean that you can't sign everybody. That's certainly true. You won't be able to sign everybody, but they're trying to win now. That's the way I took it. And, you know, they don't know what Fultz is going to eventually turn out to be in the future.
Right, right, right. Well, let's go up to everybody's favorite team, the team that every free agent in the league wants to play for, but they never seem to land that guy, the New York Knicks. In the trade, they moved Porzingis. What was your take on that?
Well, I mean, it's to me, it's something you're almost put in a position to do. If a player says he's not going to resign, you're in a position where you want to get something for that player, because you know that when his contract's up, he's already told you that he's not going to sign with you. So they're doing the smart thing for the franchise, is to move the player and get something for the player while you can. So it's really, to me, a magnanimous move on the player's part. They're them announcing that they're not going to re-sign, because a lot of players could take the position that, you know, of not publicly stating that they're not going to sign. And if the team holds on to them and their contract's up, then they walk away, and then that team doesn't get anything. So they're at least, in my mind, at least alerting the team that they're not going to re-sign, and that if they want to get something for him, they better move him now. That's just another way that you can look at that.
Right, 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 right. And the situation in Boston with Kyrie Irving, he's kind of waffling in terms of his, you know, what he's going to do, if he will come back, if he's going to move on. He's reached out to LeBron, and there's speculation that there'll be a LA reunion between him and LeBron. How do you see that?
Well, it's hard to say exactly what's going to happen, but I mean, things just get so distorted in some ways, because, you know, the media is so powerful that they're trying to project everything out even before it's time to project it out. So, I mean, you don't know what Kyrie's going to do, because probably Kyrie doesn't even know what he's going to do. So, but you have everyone trying to figure exactly what is he going to do. But it's really hard to say. A lot depends on what happens the rest of the season, I'm sure. A lot depends on what other teams do now that strengthens them and makes their team attractive looking to a player like Kyrie. Kyrie is a heck of a proven player. So, I mean, to me, he's one of the best in the league. But, you know, you just don't know exactly what's going to play out because it's too early. But the projections have become so that they're called on so early now that, you know, you have to extrapolate it out so far that it's hard to figure exactly what somebody's going to do because I really don't feel that the player knows what he's going to do yet.
Right. Well, along that line, I think Klay Thompson is a classic example of that. You know, he has said repeatedly that he loves being with the Warriors and he isn't going any place, but yet when there's speculation and talk about free agents this summer, his name is always mentioned as going here or possibly going there.
He's a class act. He's always been. He's a heck of a player. And you're exactly right, Roscoe, that, I mean, his name gets mentioned all the time, that he loves the Warriors, and he should because they play the game the way that the game should be played, I think. They have a lot of great players, but the ball moves, the players move and cut. It's an open offense that everybody gets to touch the ball, that nobody's sitting on the ball all the time, and their team plays a style that any player in the league would love to be a part of because of that style and because they win all the time, the majority of the time. That has something to do with it too, but this style of play is lucrative and enticing for other players to see that and to be involved in that because everyone has a chance to be involved.
You know, and the way I look at Klay, you know, strictly from a basketball standpoint, and I guess from a financial standpoint, too, it wouldn't make sense for him to move because Golden State can give him more money than anybody else, unless it's a sign and trade, of course. But his game is such that he's dependent on other people. He's not going to carry a team. And if he goes someplace else, I'm sure they're going to look for him to be their lead dog, you know, to carry the team.
Yeah.
And he's just, and that's just not who he is. So why should he leave Golden State to go someplace else to be a second or third guy?
Yeah, that style of play is perfect for him. The team has been built that way with him being a part of it. And if you go somewhere else, that happens all the time, I see. It happens where a player is fitted into a system. He's playing this style with this group of players, and it works just fine. But he looks really attractive, and he goes to another team without that situation being built that way, and the player doesn't fit as well. He's still a good player, but he's not the same player that he was in that system. So you have to be careful about that when players move from one area to another because it can totally change his dynamics on the court.
Well, you talk about a system and temperament and how they play at Golden State, moving the ball around, as opposed to maybe the antithetical aspect of it would be going to a place like Houston where you sit out there, watch Harden dribble the ball down to 8 seconds and then have to get a shot off or something of that regard. Would you think Klay would fit in a system like that or not fit in a system like that? Or by the same token, you look at OKC where you had Harden, Durant, Westbrook together, that kind of firepower, and that they couldn't work together.
Well, first of all, that was when they were younger, too. So, I mean, it's hard to compare them at that stage of their careers with the stage they are now in their careers. So, sure, it didn't work to the extent that everyone wanted it to work, but nothing to say if they had stayed together that it wouldn't have worked, in my mind. But it didn't work out to the extent while they were there. So Harden moved on and all that. But Klay could fit in the system with Houston because he's good enough. But they play a totally different style than Golden State. I mean, with Harden making the plays and making the decisions with the ball, and it so happens that Houston has the players that are built to play with Harden. Those players on that team, there's some players on that team that, you know, that are great shooters, but they don't facilitate their own shots as well. They can't create. So they're perfect to fit on that team with Harden. So it just depends on the player, his style, and the team that he's with. So Houston has the style of players that fit with that style, and Golden State has the style of players that fit with that particular style. Now, which one will win in the finals? I mean, most people would pick Golden State because of their experience and their past history. But, you know, you still have to play the game. If it gets to that point, you still got to play it. And, you know, you got to see what happens when they get on the court.
Well, on the court last year, I'm thinking, and maybe just, you know, you make assumptions. Once Chris Paul got hurt last year in the series when they played against Golden State, the Rockets were done. Do you think maybe last year was the year the Rockets would have overtaken the Golden State Warriors?
Well, they could have. I mean, they could have. They were playing well, but, you know, injuries are part of the game too. So you can't say if is the smallest word in the English language with the biggest meaning. So you can't negate that, but injuries happen. And sure, they were unfortunate to have that happen. And, of course, everybody in Houston will say if he didn't get hurt, we were going to beat him. But he did get hurt. You didn't beat him. And you just have to get healthy and come back and try it again. But I don't know for sure that they were going to beat Golden State. I don't know that. I know that Chris Paul made a difference in that game, but they still may not have won. But I don't know. I'm not willing to say that automatically, that with him playing, they would have beat him. It would have been nice to watch it, but it just didn't happen. So they just have to try it again.
Well, I can't believe we've gone this far in this conversation and not mention Kevin Durant. That has to be a record, and, you know, and what he's going to do. And I guess it's like what you said, Billy, earlier, that probably even he doesn't know what he's going to do. But
he is one heck of a player. I mean, with that size and his ability to do so many things, I love him as a player because of his ability to score the ball, but because he certainly has other abilities to do other things on the court, and he's shown that as far as rebounding, blocking a shot, or making a play with the ball. I mean, he can do so much more than just shoot the ball. So he's one heck of a player also that it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, I mean, the season's half over. I mean, you know, we're past, you know, we're getting to the All-Star break, so it's kind of early to exactly say what's going to happen at the end of the season, because a lot depends on what happens at the end of the season. That could change and sway a lot of opinions of these players as the year goes on and finishes up. They'll make their minds up, some of them, after the season's over and things play themselves out.
You know,
now, you mentioned it's the coming to the All-Star break. The other guys who are All-Stars who are vastly underrated, and I looked at a game last night. I was watching Portland play, and we don't get the chance to see the Trailblazers play a lot. They have some really talented guys out there. And I think Dame Lillard doesn't get the run that he should get nationally as far as being a guy that really is talented.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you, Damian Lillard, because he's in Portland, I guess. But, you know, all the games are on TV. All of them are, you know, are televised and highlighted and things. So he should get more pub. I think he's a heck of a player, and he's proven that year after year. And he's had a few All-Star game snubs in the past, I think, in years past. But, he's a heck of a player that happens to be in the West Coast, and the West Coast historically has been loaded with players that, you know, have been overlooked in the All-Star games and all-league voting because they're in the Western Conference. And that's why the cry is going out these days for, playoff positioning and all of that be decided by the best records and not by the conferences and divisions and all of those things. So we'll see if that stuff changes. But we may get to see more players like Damian Lillard because of that, if something like that were to change. But you can't change where he is. I mean, he's on the West Coast, so the people on the East don't see him as much because the games come on at 10:30. And then, you know, a lot of people don't want to watch a replay of the game once they know the final score already. That you, people always say, oh, you can tape the game if it comes on at 10:30, just tape it. Well, once you get up and see the score, you're not going to necessarily sit there and watch the game, the whole game, unless you have a reason to. So that's not going to change for Damian Lillard, that he's going to be in, you know, on the East Coast right away. But he's in the West Coast, and he's proven that he's a heck of a player, that's for sure.
So Billy, what do you think about maybe increasing the All-Star roster? I mean, because the regular season rosters have increased. Rather than having 12, go to 13, 14, 15. Because, you know,
I don't know.
I mean, because a lot of the older guys don't want to play in the game anyway.
Yeah, they don't want to spend a lot of time on the court, that's for sure. But,
and, you know, you have guys who are injured who, you know, make the squad.
Yeah. I mean, once you get picked as an All-Star, even if you're injured and don't play, you still maintain that All-Star status. I know. I mean, but I don't know about increasing the size of it. I guess there's a lot of purists and old school guys that think that would, you know, dilute the worth of the All-Star positioning. I'm not sure. That's something, I guess, to be debated. But I'm not sure. Maybe there is a place to add another player or two on an All-Star game, but that's such a big deal, you know, when you're one of 24 players in the league out of the 500 that are in the league, 500 or so that are in the league to make the All-Star team. That is such a big deal to be a part of that. And I don't know. That's very debatable to see how that's going to work out, because I know it could work both ways. I know I've made the All-Star team in years past, and I was hurt one year and I didn't play. And then somebody just took my place, but I still got my All-Star ring and all of those things that you get from the All-Star game, but you just didn't play because I got hurt early on in this first half before, you know, like after 30 or 40 games, I think I got hurt. So,
yeah.
I don't know. That's just something to be debated, I guess, by somebody or by the league executives, if what they're thinking about that. But, and then a lot of cases are a lot of players have the bonus statements in their contracts for making the All-Star team, too. So, that could be worth a lot of money to a lot of guys, too.
But, you know, my thinking is that, you know, you've had the 12-man rosters since the game started, and you only had 8 teams or, you know, 12 teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now you have 30 teams, and you still have that 12-man roster. So
there's something to be said for that. There's something to be said that way. Absolutely. Absolutely, you could look at it that way and say that you need to increase it.
Well, you mentioned the bonus, and there's a financial consideration, and sometimes people think more along those lines. But to see the reaction of a Rudy Gobert when he did not make the All-Star team, that was something that I have not seen from too many other guys who are out there playing. When you talk about the only guys who don't want to be there, this is a guy who wanted to be there. Now, I don't know. I understand he had a $1 million bonus. If you made the All-Star team, were those tears of missing the bonus or tears of being left off of the roster?
he's a hard-nosed player. I don't know. He's making a lot of money anyway. I don't know if that would be an incentive for him necessarily. He was good enough to make the All-Star team, I think. So he had legitimate complaints, but there's just, you know, like Roscoe keeps saying, there's only so many players that can make it when you have – you know, 15 teams in the West, and you theoretically could take a player off every team almost. if the team's not having a good first half, you take two players off the team with the best record or something. So it's just debatable all the way around, that's for sure. But I know Gobert is one of the guys in the West that I think got left off of an All-Star game before.
Anytime they have an All-Star selection like this on the NBA, I think back to, decades ago when Chuck Daly was the Eastern coach, and Drazen Petrovic was left off the East roster. He played for the Nets at the time. I mean, he was just an incredible shooter. And Daly said at the time, he said, you know, he's a young guy. He'll make it next year. Well, that summer he died in an auto accident. So, you think about this may be the shot for some of these guys. And so, you know, it's always dicey when you pick that, when you have to make a selection like that.
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough, though. It is tough. 30 teams and good players and, you know, somebody having a good year, it's hard when they get left off, their feelings get hurt, and the pride is hurt, because you do play the game quite a bit on pride of the game. So, sure, like you said, there's players that play for the money. You know, you can play it for the money if you want, because it's a lot of money, so you're playing for it. But I think more than not, players are playing it for the pride.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is that every year, somebody who deserves to be there is going to get left off. That's just a fact of life, you know, more than one. So I guess they just have to put on their big boy pants and suck it up. So, Billy, where do you come
down? Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you get left off, and you're left off according to your own judgment, you're left off. And sometimes you're left off according to somebody else's judgment. So just depends on how you want to look at this.
Right. So, Billy, where do you come down? There's been a lot of talk, you know, about seeding teams in the playoffs. You kind of mentioned that earlier, seeding teams in the playoffs without regard to conference, just the 16 best teams.
Well, I like that idea personally. I think that would be a good idea. I think that would ensure that the better teams don't meet up too soon and, you know, things like that. Yeah, I like the idea of just seeding it, you know, East versus West. And you know, there's some debate as to whether you seed it in the whole NBA. You know, the best records is number one all the way down to 16.
Right.
You know, for the playoffs, you don't even go East and West. So, you know, it's just another adjustment that can be made to the game. I think it would be good for it. I really do think that would be good for the league to do it that way. But I guess everybody has to vote on it. Every team and every organization will get a chance to vote on something, a change like that.
Do you think it might happen?
I think it's possible to happen, sure. I mean, Adam Silver seems to be a forward-thinking, you know, commissioner, and some, you know, revolutionary new things are being talked about and organized to be put into place on. I think it certainly is possible to happen, absolutely.
Now, Billy, our producer, Ricky Hansen, is on, and I think he has a question for you as well.
Okay.
Hey, Billy, man, it's great to have you on the show tonight. Yeah, thank you, sir. Two things. I'm a sports writer here in Detroit, and I was thinking about that trade of Tobias Harris. He was here for a couple of years, played great while he was here. You know, they wanted to bring Blake in, played well in L.A., and he was talking the other night. He said, man, I don't know why I get traded so much. And I think back to when Chauncey Billups came to town, and Chauncey had bounced around, and he played his best basketball here, won a championship here. What is it, you know, Chauncey was a high pick. What is it that takes guys a while? Why was Chauncey bouncing around and then found a place here in Detroit and really made a mark? And I could see something like that happening to Tobias, because he is a terrific player. I'd love for you to comment on that. And one other thing, quick thing, and I'll let you guys get back to it. when I was a young sports writer, I had the opportunity to meet Mel Daniels when he was scouting for the Pacers,
mm-hmm.
and he was so kind
mm-hmm.
and gracious. Can you tell our listening audience across the country what kind of player he was and what kind of man he was?
Yeah. Well, you probably still are vibrating from the handshake Mel Daniels gave you when you met him. So hopefully your wrist and your hand is recovered from that, because he had one of the fiercest handshakes in the history of the world. He and Artis Gilmore. I'd pay admission to see those two come to half court and meet just at half court and just to shake hands. That's all they have to do is shake hands. See which one is going to last the longest.
Thank God for the fist bump.
Yeah, right. We learned to do that with Mel. But Mel was a ferocious competitor and a hard-nosed guy, great rebounder and scorer. He was just happened to play his career in the ABA and never got the chance to play, you know, when he was really playing. So we love Mel around Indiana. We cherish him and still think of him and talk about him. And a lot of the guys that live in Indy, we still get together. And George McGinnis, Bob Nedelicki, Don Boozy, Billy Keller. I see all of those guys when I go to Indianapolis. And we still talk about Big Mel all the time. Slick Leonard is still there in Indy. We talk to him. So, yeah, we get together and talk about it. And Mel is always at the top of the con. Mel and Roger Brown both, because Roger was another great player that played his whole career in the ABA. And was a great, great player. So, we talk about those guys all the time because we have a lot of fond memories of them, a lot of great stories to tell that you probably wouldn't even tell on the radio, because Mel and everyone used to carry pistols and, you know, all of that stuff. Mel carried his Colt 45. And so, yeah, him and Roger would have fake gunfights and stuff like that. They tell the story about one of the guns going off and just missing the other player, so in their fake gunfight. So, yeah, stories like that are just reverberating all over Indianapolis about those guys. But
so the names that you mentioned as far as – I'm sorry, the names that you mentioned in terms of who you played with, Boozy and those guys, and I'm thinking about the merger when that happened, and that had to have been something that was as far as teams like Indiana and Denver and San Antonio coming into the NBA, that had to, in New Jersey, that had to be really huge for those guys.
Oh, man, it was great because I got to play 2 years in the ABA, and then the rest of my career was played in the NBA. And in 1976, when the leagues merged, that was great for us being ABA guys to merge with the NBA. But we had it in mind that we love the NBA and we admired those guys because they were got the TV contracts and we didn't have that. But when we joined the league, we wanted to show that we could play basketball too. So I can remember that first All-Star game that I played in after the leagues merged to Milwaukee. And we looked around the roster and there was about 8 or 9 guys on the teams that had played in the ABA. So certainly we were grateful and appreciative and honored to be selected to the All-Star game. But we certainly, you know, had in our minds that we wanted to show that we from the ABA could play in this league too. So that was in our minds also. But no, to answer your producer's question about Tobias Harris and Chauncey Billups, I remember Chauncey, he got drafted by Boston and it was top 5 pick. It might have been number 3 or 5. But he didn't fit in Boston, and that happens sometimes. You have no matter how good a player you are, you still have to fit with the team, with the players, the roster they have, with the coach. You still have to fit into that situation at that particular time for it to work and be successful for you. So no matter how good you are, I mean, whatever player you got, I mean, Magic Johnson, as good as he was, fortunately for him and for the Lakers and for the rest of the league and world, the Lakers fit with him to play so that he could play his style. If he'd gone to another team, you know, the coach could have been trying to, we're not going to be a fast-breaking team like that. We're not going to run up and down. We're going to play a controlled offense. But he fit with the Lakers at that time and everything. Larry Bird fit with Boston. at that time. So, but no matter how great a player you are, you're going to be, you still have to fit in the organization with the roster and all of those things, the coaching style, the technique, the temperament of that coach. Because some coaches are hollers and screamers, and some players don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear a coach hollering and screaming, calling them names. You know, nobody, some guys don't stand for that kind of stuff. So it all has to fit the right way for it to work.
And you were talking about the ABA. And, I mean, the impact that it had on the NBA is still being felt today, you know, with the, you know, the three-point shot and just so many other different things, you know, even little things like the names on the back of the back of the uniforms. The NBA wasn't doing that. The ABA was, you know, the All-Star Weekend Slam Dunk Contest. I mean, there were some truly great, great players who came out of the ABA.
They didn't bring our red, white, and blue ball with this, Roscoe, but, you know, they brought a lot of things from the ABA to the NBA because the NBA was, you know, more established and you know, more in demand and all of that. That's true, but we were a more wide-open league, and that's the way the game is being played now. It's more wide open. It's people are shooting threes left and right. I mean, that was the reputation that the ABA had, and that's what we brought to the NBA, and it was a needed influx at that time for the league to have that, and it worked out well for everyone because you know, the league embraced all of those. The league took in the 3-point shot and even the style of play and all of those things had something to do with it. So it was good for everyone, I think.
When you see the Warriors, do you see the old Nuggets in terms of how, you know, those guys used to just fill it up all the time?
I don't necessarily see the Nuggets, but I see the wide open style of play. Yeah, the Nuggets were a wide open team, but the Nuggets didn't shoot a lot of threes. I mean, they played an open style, I think. But I think it's just the open style that it reminds me of the ABA. It does. The Nuggets were one of the all-time high-scoring teams. I can draw some comparisons between the two, but the Warriors play a unique style and have a unique compilation of talent and the chemistry and the coaching style. All of those things fit to where it works really well for them. And obviously, by it shown in their championships, it's producing wins also. And Roscoe, you were talking about this about the Super Bowl. How you know, what did you say? Offense brings fans, and defense wins championships. Well, the Warriors, I mean, you know, they play D. Now, don't get me wrong, but they're an offensive juggernaut. They score the ball. They score the ball. So, and that's my kind of game. I mean, I know I was an offensive player, but I like a team to score. I thought that was one of the most boring Super Bowls I ever seen in my life. I mean, I'd rather watch paint dry than watch that Super Bowl. I wanted to see some points on the board. It was years ago one of the All-Star games, George Gervin, who's a friend of mine, and the great offensive player, Pete Maravich, you know, was an offensive player. So I remember them teaching me. They were teaching me something. They told me, said, listen, young fella, you know why those guys sitting over there on the side are such good defensive players? Do you understand really why they're good defensive players? Because they couldn't shoot. That's why they're playing defense, because they can't shoot. Everybody would rather play offense. But the guys that can't shoot, they become defensive players. So I'll never forget that. Because I like to see some offense score, some scoring, the points go up, and all of those things. And don't get me wrong, I know you have to guard and play defense and everything, but I know some guys that couldn't guard a chair that still were good players, but they could, because they could score, they could do other things. But it's just more fun. I think players enjoy playing in an up-tempo style. Even the defensive players, you get to play more defense when you're playing a more flowing, open game. When people are trying to score, that's when you can, your defense will even shine. When you're stopping somebody that tries to score, when you're just walking the ball up the court and setting up and running a half-court offense, milking the clock, all of that, even the defensive players don't get to show they can play defense at that time.
Yeah.
So give me offense all day. Give me offense all day, all the time.
I remember a coach down in Columbus, Georgia, Herb Green, used to always say, if you can shoot, they'll find a place for you to play.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So talking about the Warriors, what will it take to beat them in a seven-game series?
Well, you're going to have to score the ball, first of all. I mean, yeah, you're going to have to score the ball. You can talk about assembling a great defensive team if you want to. Oh, we're going to get a great defensive team. We're going to guard these guys. We're going to slow them down. We're going to stop them. I think you're going to have to comprise a team of guys that can score the ball too, because you still got to outscore them. You still have to outscore the Warriors. You're not going to score. You're not going to beat them in an 80 or 90 point game or even a 100 point game. You got to score 110 points or 120 points to beat the Warriors in a game, I think. So you have to be able to score. And you have to, sure, make it difficult for them. You can't give them easy shots. You can't give them easy transition points. You can't give them open threes. No, all of that is true, but you have to be able to guard them some. But you have to have a versatile team, because their team is very versatile, and they're able to go really small. Able to play really a small lineup, so you have to have a good versatile team and be able to match down to them too when they go down, but then they'll go big sometimes too. So you have to be versatile to beat them, and I think you have to be able to score.
Yeah, but from what I've seen, if they don't turn the ball over, say 20 times or more, they're going to win the game. You know, if they get enough shots. You know, they're going to make enough shots to win. I mean, that's just, you know, from the time that they've been good, that has been their MO, you know, when they turn the ball over.
Yeah, and so somebody's going to be able to shoot the ball. I mean, even if one or two of them have a bad night, I mean, the other guys are going to still shoot the ball, and they're going to score the majority of the time when they do shoot. I mean, Durant to me is a monster. He's a real monster because of his size. Now, Curry's great, a great shooter, and a great ball handler, but Durant is such a monster because of his size. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You put a big guy on him, and under normal circumstances, you aren't going to find a big guy that can keep up with him around the floor, out on the floor. And if you put a guy, smaller guy that can stay with him, he's going to shoot over him. So he is, to me, he is such a monster, that guy.
Yeah, he is. He certainly is. Yeah. Well, Billy, we certainly appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge and experiences about the NBA and the ABA with us and our audience. It's just been a delight talking with you. Certainly appreciate that.
Well, I certainly appreciate talking to you guys. I enjoy listening to you. So you guys take care. Safe travels and enjoy yourself. Be careful and God bless.
Okay, Billy.
Thanks, Billy.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
I mean, he's seen it all, hasn't he, in the NBA? He's done it all, seen it all?
Well, quite a bit. That he hasn't seen probably wasn't worth seeing anyway. But he's
right?
Quite a guy. He's quite a guy.
And you see what I did? Did I not mention? I mentioned nothing about my Hawks.
Are you well? Are you sick?
No, I was restraint on my part. Okay, because I know what happened. Because he got a raw deal here in Atlanta with a really jagged-legged ownership group. I just didn't want to have, you know, rile him up about anything about that. Because I have somewhere on my computer a classic photo of Billy, one of the people in that ownership group. With the handshake. And his look on his face was like, that was my one of my all-time favorite photos. And, I think about that all the time.
That's one thing about Billy. You know, he's a stand-up guy. You know, and he's not going to fake the funk. You know.
Yeah, and that was, to me, that was classic.
Yeah. That's really nice. Yep.
Billy, that's a busy night in the NBA too, because like it wasn't like the Tobias Harris trade wasn't the only one. It seemed like there was just a flurry of them. Going along here, and one thing where like we mentioned, Anthony Davis sitting out there, and he's healthy, and he hadn't played the past couple of games. The night the Pelicans are at the Bulls, he's a healthy scratch again.
That's usually an indication that he's going places. That a player is going places when they sit him. Don't want to risk injury. So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Oh my gosh! And then you know his AD's dad said I would not go to Boston because of what happened to Nate
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, what happened to him? And so you know you got family members getting engaged in this type thing. So this trade deadline is a serious thing.
Yes.
Hey guys, you know what I thought? Well, one thing we forgot to really get into. Billy Knight could play too. Back in the day,
He could shoot it.
All star.
I mean,
all-star
he
played both.
He could shoot it. He could shoot it.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, so when he was with the Pacers, he was just outstanding. I mean, he was the guy you worried about. You know, those slick linen teams. He was the one you worried about every time you saw the Pacers play.
Yeah, that's he was a great player, man. Great interview, fellas. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, sir. But, you know, that Washington has some other issues that they have to deal with, too, because I see where John Wall slipped and injured himself at his home, and he's expected to return to basketball activities 12 months from the injury. He developed an infection where he had surgery on January 8th, and then somewhere he slipped and ruptured a tendon after slipping at his house. So it seems like setback after setback after setback with Mr. Wall. And I'm quite sure the folks in the Wizards have to be just shaking their head. DC period, DC sports, you got your stars getting crushed. You got your quarterback, Smith, breaking his leg, and he's probably going to miss all of next year. And it's like Wall's going to be 12 months away, so. It's not a whole lot to smile about.
And Bryce Harper is leaving town.
Has that been official yet?
It's not official, but, you know, he's gone. He's gone.
There's not a whole lot to deal with, though. Bryce is an outstanding talent. And like Wall, this is the first year of a four-year extension of $42 million. So who knows if he's even going to see to start playing to even be to get anything out of that. Because I'm quite sure it's guaranteed.
Guaranteed. And then there's the ripple effect. You know, if I'm Bradley Beal, you know, I'm looking around, and, you know.
I want to win.
Let me get out of here. You know, and he will be a free agent. So, what do?
You let him go. You got to. And then you can do it. Can they put a tag on him of some sort and then, you know, or make a qualifying offer that makes them stay? I don't know what the situation is with that. You want to sneak in a couple of HBCU notes, whereas Morgan State's about to get a new football coach, and the new football coach is a familiar name, Tyrone Wheatley, of Michigan fame. Looks like those guys are going to get, you know, they're getting some star power, at least on the coaching side.
Yeah, but what do they have on the field? You know.
Which we're trying to market here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wish him well, but, I mean, you know, I just wonder if he's truly prepared for what he's getting into, you know, given
well,
his background.
It was a volatile situation. Those guys have had four head coaches since 2014. So you don't get a whole lot, a long time to make an impression, obviously, playing there. And
true.
That's going to be something he's going to have to make some sort of an impact relatively quickly there. We were talking about, you know, Billy was talking about how he hated he wasn't a big fan of this year's Super Bowl, nor was I, or the halftime show for that matter, but that's another story. But this was the lowest rated Super Bowl since 2003. It had a lot to do with an entire city deciding not to watch the game. And I'm looking at you, New Orleans. Because from what I understand, they played. I think they played the Super Bowl for the year that they won on the television stations and the bars and stuff down there. So yeah, New Orleans was not having any of that. And you know, in hindsight, I think the Saints would have given them the Patriots a much better game. If you know.
Well, all we know is what we know. The Rams didn't give them much of a game. The Saints weren't there. Now, you know, this is one of the three least interesting games in Super Bowl history, right up there with the Redskins and the Dolphins, that 14-7 game, I think after the, 71 season. And
About the blowout, the San Diego, out of San Diego.
Then the Colts and the Cowboys, Jim O'Brien's field goal, 16-13.
Yeah.
I mean, those were just dog games. At least those blowout games you had, even though they were lopsided, you had a lot of scoring and, you know.
Yeah, but how often do you have a Super Bowl that's over in the first quarter? Like when the 49ers put it on the Chargers that year. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and how often do you have a Super Bowl that you wished was over in the first quarter?
That's true, because this one was a torturous one. For all the spectacle and all the pageantry and everything, it was a painful watch for those who loved the game or wanted to see the game on a higher level. And you just suffer through it. It's okay. Football will be here soon. And you know what? And I know you're a huge, huge, huge baseball fan. And you know spring training starts next Friday. So,
pitchers and catchers.
Yeah, they report. So if people can just hold off for this 1 week of nothing, then they'll be happy. They'll be onto a baseball and root for their favorite teams. I'm thinking about one Super Bowl. Go ahead.
And your favorite team?
Well, I don't have one. I used to root for the Atlanta Braves, but they're no longer in Atlanta, so I'm done with them. Are we going to do it? Speaking of the Braves, happy belated birthday to the all-time home run king, the real one, Henry Aaron. His birthday was yesterday. These people who had help. I can't, you know, A-Rod and Barry and cats like that. And see, the thing with Barry, he was an outstanding ball player before the allegations of a performance enhancing thing. The guy could flat out hit, and so he didn't need a lot of assistance. But Hank, for my money, wearing no batting gloves, picks up a toothpick and goes out there and hits 755 home runs.
He was quite a guy. He's quite a guy. I remember.
I
remember the Braves used to have a caravan in off season, go around, travel city to city, you know, promoting the team, and they went down to Plains, Georgia, to play a softball game against Billy Carter's All Stars, and Billy Carter was pitching. He was the pitcher, and he had a can of beer on the mound behind him, and he was serving up pitches and sipping between pitches, and it was the home run king versus the king of beer drinkers.
Photos he probably got out of there. Well, just like I said, we got to hold on for one more week with the with the sports world pretty much being at a lull. But the NBA, I guess, will be taking over that with All-Star Weekend. Will be coming up to fill in that gap. But we had a great show tonight. Thanks again to Billy Knight for his insight and just his knowledge that he gave us. And so until next time, everybody, we just want to just say thank you. And Roscoe, we want to talk about how folks will go about what are they going to be doing?
It ain't what you look like when you're doing what you're doing. It's what you're doing when you look like what you're doing. Express yourself.